Mr. Swanson, reel two.
Oh, I think when we're talking about digging the trucks out and that thing, I think I could mention on that the Ford trucks we had were four-wheel drive, which was a great help in the sand.
Any other special techniques you had to use in the desert?
Well, you also had the what they call sand mats, which required more help. What you did if you're really in a bad position, really soft sand, you'd imagine the sand tray only being about 6 foot long, I think around about that, you'd just be off of that in no time. So you had sand mats, which were canvas mats with ribs, you know, timber ribs through them. And they were put under the front wheel, and someone had to hold them, you know, taut, so that when you run off the sand channel, you got onto these mats, and this helped to give you, you know, enough maybe pace up to get free of the soft one. But the channel itself, as I say, sometimes was enough, but only being 6 foot long, you probably would just go off the end of that down into the soft sand again. And the more you tried to get it out, you had to be very light on the throttle, otherwise the more throttle you gave it, you just dug yourself into the sand.
What about navigation in the desert?
Well, navigation was mainly done by the sun compass. If I'm not mistaken, was it called the Bagnall Sun Compass? Now I'm just trying to think of.
I think so.
Yes.
Brigadier Bagnall, I think, invented it.
That was done with a chart and calibrations on the thing. And this was just for running during the day, which was a reasonably good guide. But then the navigator had to be able to take a star shot at night with this theodolite. And that was a combination of a star shot and a time signaler from the signaler. And they often used to have to spend quite some time after the day's running was over, you know, and to get this star shot, which gives you an exact pinpoint of where you were.
Did you ever get lost in the desert?
Pardon?
Did you ever get lost in the desert?
Well, I didn't get lost, but it just shows how easily it is to get lost. We were out picking up supplies once, and I forget, this was when it was an A squadron, and Sergeant Major Shepherd was there in charge of the party and navigating. And I actually had two Indians along with me in a big Italian truck, which we had been captured in a Lancia. And usually the thing was that if one truck got stuck, everyone else couldn't stop. They just kept going until they were sure they were on hard ground, and then they might stop, you know, and wait until you're caught up or even maybe give a hand. But on this occasion, we'd got stuck I'd got stuck with this big Lancia, and this Indian chap, myself, we were digging away and got it started. And I just thought, now, as soon as I sort of come over this rise, I'll see the other trucks. Nothing. So I waited there just for, you know, for maybe just 10 minutes, a quarter an hour. No sign of anyone coming back and that. And I thought, I'll just, you know, if I proceed in the general direction. Yeah, and I'll find them sitting waiting. And I kept going on and going on and going on for some time. And nothing, just not a thing to be seen. And you could imagine you could see for, you know, quite some distance. It was, you know, visibility was perfect. We were actually going to an oasis, Jarlow it was called, a miserable sort of place. But anyhow, after I'd run on for some time, I came across, you know, tracks all over the place, so I knew I was coming, you know, reasonably near the oasis. So I just kept going, and I just hit it and got in there. But I got into a lot of trouble, because obviously I couldn't see them, and when the sergeant major had gone back, he couldn't see me. But it was very simple to miss one another in it, you know. And I got into the oasis just as dusk was falling, you know. And it was the following morning before the rest of the party came in, and you can imagine what he said to me. But I always seem to have a fairly good sense of direction. But the difficult thing really was to know whether, right, I should have just stayed where I was. But I was so confident, you know, the direction, that if I just sort of motor on for another mile or so, I'm bound to see. I think there was another four or five trucks, you know, and you just, it's almost unbelievable how they could just disappear like that.
Did you ever personally come under enemy air attack?
Pardon?
Did you ever come under enemy air attack personally in the desert?
No, but I believe this was the one thing that really, where you could be really in trouble, because if you were caught out in the open, as quite a number of trucks or patrols had been, you didn't stand a great deal, much chance of evading. Or else the main thing probably would, you know, somebody, if you're being machine gun, was just to leave the truck and bail out. Because really there was, you felt very exposed, I imagine.
What about the nomadic peoples in the desert? Did you come across those?
Well, you did, but you didn't have a great lot to do with them, really, because on the whole, unless some chaps who were stranded on foot or like that, probably went to an encampment and, you know, were treated quite well and that. But as far as the patrols were concerned, I think their main thing was to keep clear of everyone. I mean, you could never be quite sure, you know, whether they were all for you or whether they could report you to the Germans or the Italians. So I think on the main, you just kept well away from their encampments as far as possible. And you didn't really come across many of them until you got reasonably near the coast road. You know what I mean? You didn't find them, you know what I mean, miles into the desert, as you might say, unless it was an oasis.
Did you find the desert healthy or unhealthy place to be?
So, I found it very healthy, very healthy.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. It must have been because I remember when we were in Cyprus, it was a different climate there. It was awful humid, sort of heat that left you feeling rather weak. And while I was there, I came out and I had impetigo. I had boils or carbuncles under my arms.
And your armpits.
And for the time we were there, it just never cleared up. And one doctor would say, don't shave. I went somewhere else and a doctor says, shave. You imagine it was rather painful when your face had all broken out. And when the commander moved back from Cyprus to Alexandria, I wasn't back there more than 2 weeks. Everything is cleared up. So it must have been something, I imagine, in the to do with the climate as well. And I found that during the time we spent in the desert, whether it was down towards the Egyptian border, or when we got up right up to Tripoli, the only thing I can say that some chaps found, if they got sores, what they called desert sores, but more like ulcers, they found they had an awful trouble getting them to heal up. But personally, and I think most chaps out there would say that they found the desert quite a healthy place to live.
Despite the irksomeness of the lack of water?
Well, when you were back at an oasis, there was usually plenty of water there, you know, where Siwa, Kufa, Jala, there was usually enough water there. There was one or two places along the Egyptian border that were, you know, fairly miserable places to live, but you had enough water in as much as for your cooking and things like that. So you didn't mind the fact that you didn't have to shave, really. So whenever you got back, of course, the first thing you did was to get in to have a swim somewhere like that, or a shower. But while you were out there, even if you were away for 3 weeks or something, it didn't really bother you very much, seemed to, that you didn't have to get a wash or a shave.
Were there lots of flies in the desert?
Not a great lot, but the surprising thing was about it that if you were there and you weren't eating or doing anything, you wouldn't see a fly. But as soon as you started cooking or, to have your lunch, there would be the odd ones. But no, you didn't get the number of flies that you would get round about the towns and that, no. But they were always there, and they're surprising. You often wonder where they came from. But not in any quantity to really bother you, you know what I mean? Annoy you. No.
Now, the North Africa campaign more or less finished in May 1943. Were you still with the Long Range Desert
Yes.
Group then? Did you go into Tunisia?
No. When it got as far as the LRDG did some work in leading Montgomery's left too, because they call it through there. But that when that was finished, that was us finished. Like
But that didn't concern you.
the farthest I got was up to Tripoli. In fact, in Tripoli, that's where we handed in all our trucks and that. And that was us, just we got issued with jeeps. And we retired right back to Palestine.
Did
That was
you
it. That's when the Desert War was over.
go into action again?
Well, we were then formed into patrols to still supposedly operate behind the lines. So we did a parachute course. And a parachute course in a place called Ramat David, I think is what you call it. There's quite a, I think there's probably quite a number of the guards men had probably returned to the units. There was guards, the patrols were made up by either what they call yeomanry, although they weren't strictly all yeomanry after the commanders had joined them. A yeomanry patrol, a guards patrol, which was all guardsmen from whether it was the Coldstream Guards, the Welsh Guards, or the Scots Guards. So I was still in a patrol. They formed a patrol and still called it G Patrol, and it was all guardsmen except two of us. And as we did a parachute course, and this is, I think, when we landed first place, we went to the Dodecanese Islands, which we didn't, we went by ship there. There wasn't any, no case of being dropped there. And we were there until the Germans recaptured the islands. We actually went to the islands when just when the Italians had, I don't know how you put it, capitulated.
In the autumn of 43. And what did you find when you got to the Dodecanese? What was the military situation?
Well, there was nothing happening then because the Italians were still in charge of the islands. And one thing I found out very quickly, the Italians were very hard on the native population. Almost caused a riot with some of our lads. But we landed on, we were on an island called Kalanos or something, I think it was, where that island, you could actually see the biggest island there was, you probably know, was Kos. And we actually had a view of the attack on Kos when the Germans, went to retake it. And we were at one time, we were standing by, supposedly go across to assist them in Kos, but I think it was cancelled again. I always seem to be missing things, but maybe not a bad thing. And from Kalnos, we went to this island Liros, which was the main base of the force in the islands at that time, although there was patrols out on some of the other smaller islands round about. But I was on liras right up until the time that the Germans captured it.
Did you see the German attack on Leros?
Oh yes.
Can you describe it?
We were on a gun position, and it was fairly commanding position. In fact, we had a fair view of the beach where the Germans landed.
This is G Patrol, is it?
Pardon?
G Patrol.
Yes. There's big coastal guns where we were, and we had to hopefully get the Italians. They were supposed to be on their side, but actually, when the time came, I don't think they were very keen. But the gun we were on, they certainly got into action, and I was well, we played them with two hits on boats coming in anyhow, you know, when the Germans landed in the early hours at first light in the morning. But prior to that, we'd been bombed almost day in, day out for quite some time at Liras. And it gave me, although it was a very unpleasant experience, there was a commanding height which we were looking onto in the centre of the island. And the Stukas used to come over day after day after day and come screaming down in that place and, you know, bombing it. And there was also I think the Ju-88s used to come over fairly frequent, but they used quite a lot of the dive bombers, you know, from, I suppose they were from Crete or Greece, quite near hand, you know. And as I said, it wasn't very pleasant to be underneath it, but it just showed that how very little damage they actually did for the almost hours they spent bombing that particular gun position. I think they probably knocked out two guns.
Out of how many?
Well, out of half a dozen. And there was quite a. There was a few casualties, but not what you would expect by actually, as I say, we were on a height further back, and we had a view of this. We were bombed ourselves, but not quite to the same extent as this, which would probably be considered, you know, the most commanding height on the island, you know. And used to be bombed day after day. And yet, I think the Stuka, it was more or less the sound and the, you know, with the wailing siren as they came, you can see them coming straight down almost. I think this was probably demoralised folk more than the actual, you know, damage they did.
Do you remember which month this was?
I just wouldn't like to say.
Was it summer?
Yes, I think it was. I should have in a book somewhere there when, you know, when the actual action. In fact, I got a book on it.
What units were on Leros at the same time as the long-range death group?
I just forget now.
Were they infantry
Oh
units?
yes, oh yes, there was infantry units on Leros, yes. But I wasn't actually in sort of any contact with them.
Was the German Air Force opposed at all by the RAF?
Well, not to any great extent, because the RAF had no chance. They couldn't operate at that distance. They would have to be operating from Cyprus or way back in Egypt. So I think, and even the Navy were on a hiding to nothing there, because they had to sort of run in at night and try and get out again before daylight. Because I remember the morning we landed in Leros, there was a raid on, and they sunk two ships that morning, and we had one of our chaps killed. And that was the raid just as we were landing, when we came from that other island, Kalinos, whatever you call it. But we also, as I say, where we were, our patrol, we had a view of the Germans landed paratroops on Leros, you know, because the sea assault, I think it wasn't going just too well, you know. So they landed paratroops.
Did you see the paratroopers land?
We again, being up on this high observation post to do, you know, saw the planes coming in, and count every man as they jumped out, and they, I don't know, it was a very, very difficult place to land paratroops, because, you know, where they were landed was very, very uneven ground. Felt sorry for them, in one way, you know, they had been a paratrooper, you know, knowing what it was, that you always hope you're coming a fairly level bit of ground when you land.
Were they within range for you to fire?
Yes,
at
we
them?
Could we could fire at them. Yes, they lost quite a lot in the drop. Quite a lot of men either lost through, you know, the fire from the British troops or from injuries sustained in landing.
What were you firing at them with?
Brain gun. We had no, at that time, the LADG, we had no heavy weapons there at all. You know, it was just either the Tommy gun or the brain guns.
And did they drop into a zone which was already occupied by infantry?
Oh yes, oh yes.
But not in the LRDG area.
Oh yes, but not in our area. But they've certainly the LRD, some of the patrols are fairly heavily involved in the fighting there. We were at the, again, at an end of the island where the, it wasn't sheer down, but a fairly steep. So it was obviously wasn't the end of the island where he would land. Although the guns could have fired out to sea, or they could fire right across the island, you know, when the landing came at the other end of the island. But there was no way that the position we were in was would be an objective for any enemy landing. As I say, it was right at the other end of the island. There's no way you could land there, because, well, it must have been a few 100 feet, you know, down. Not sheer, but fairly steep right down to the sea. So we were actually were the last in line, and the Germans advancing.
How long after the German paratroopers landed were you withdrawn from Leiros?
I think it went on for about 3 days, but I wouldn't be positive about that. As I say, my memory is not all that good in fact like that. But I would say it was about, probably about 3 days fighting at least before things began to go so far that it, well, once they committed all the troops that they had round about, there was no way of, that they were going to risk more ships and that trying to, trying to reinforce it. Which they could have done, you know what I mean? You could have landed more troops, there's no question about it. But I mean, so you'd just be probably throwing them away. Plus the fact that you were putting a quite a strain on the Navy if you were expecting them to protect them. So I think that was a case of once the troops in the immediate area had been committed, that was it.
What were you doing in those 3 days?
Eh?
What were you doing?
Well, the only action we had was actually firing at the planes or firing at the paratroopers when they landed.
So
we were still in there on that guns, but the guns were of no use once the Germans were ashore. Really, you know what I mean? In an island, there's no way you could be firing anyway. If the guns had been, you know, British guns, you might have been able to contact and give them target statement, but being Italians, well, in fact, once the Germans were ashore, I think most of the Italians were just on the way and packed their kits and they were sitting waiting. And they rather paid for that.
What was the nature of the bad relations between the Italians and the local islanders?
No, I just think it was the, I all think it was just the way that the Italians treated them. I mean, see, that when we were, I remember when we went there initially, when we were brewing up and that, there was young kiddies coming along, and they were even wanting to take the tea leaves out there and to eat it. So they were having a fairly hard time of it, there's no question about it. Of course, the Italians themselves were, you know what I mean, they weren't the best fed army or the best dressed by any means. But I think they would have been using a fairly heavy hand on the inhabitants of the islands. I would have got that idea, you know.
But did the inhabitants indicate any hatred for the Italians to you?
Any what?
Hatred for the
Oh,
Italians to
I
you?
would say they had no love for them. I would say in most cases I would have said they had no love for them. And that was, would I say on the, I can only speak for the two islands that I was on, like Kalinos and Leros.
How were you evacuated from Leros?
Well, again, I think I was rather lucky in as much that there was a Captain Greenwood who was with the LRDG, some other patrols. He came up on the night when we knew that the surrender had taken place. And he came up to our position and he says, I want two volunteers to go to a certain place, I forget what he said, to pick up some wounded. And my mate Bob Murray said, come on, Swanee, we'll go. So we volunteered. So we went down to this place where the wounded were supposed to be, and when we got there was two or three other LRDGs sent, and they said, oh, the wounded chaps have already been taken away. So we were just, Captain Greenwood said, right, let's go. So we went down to, there was another small harbour there, and we went down there, and there was a small boat with some naval chaps there. So we very luckily got on that boat and headed, just got out before daylight, and went to a small island, I forget the name, I don't know if I had it, a very small island, maybe just about 3 miles from Leros, and headed up there the following day. So all the rest of my patrol were unfortunately captured. We had a lot of wild and crazy schemes about how we were going to get away, you know, when things came, you know, to an end, as we knew it would. We even had some daft ideas about swimming out to this other island, but I think on it now, we just hadn't a clue about the strength of the tides, the currents, or anything. But that's how I got away from Leros, and just by sheer chance.
Where were
By
you?
this Captain Greenwood coming up asking for volunteers to do something else, pick up some wounded and take them down to the harbour. That was it.
Where were you taken to?
And oh, we went to the Turkish coast, Bondran or someplace, I'm not quite sure, but I don't, they must have had some agreement, because some of the British destroyers used to lie up in the Turkish bays during the day. And we were taken to a destroyer that was lying in a bay in Turkey, and from there we were taken back to Palestine.
How long were you in Turkey?
Oh, just about a day. We were actually, we were never in Turkey. We were taken directly from this island. We head up right to this destroyer, and we were put on board this destroyer, you know what I mean? But we're never actually on Turkey's.